Welcome to the Small Business Whole Health Podcast. We help you stay happy, healthy, and whole so your small business can thrive and stay vital in this ever-changing world. With holistic coaches and small business owners, Jill and Dan.
Hello, and welcome to the Small Business Whole Health Podcast. I'm Jill, and I'm here with my co-hosting partner in crime, Daniel.
Hello.
And today we are talking about cognitive dissonance. I said it right that time because I've been getting it all muddled up. So cognitive dissonance, that is when your brain tells you one thing and your actions do another thing, right, Dan?
It's the difference between your values, what you believe in, and your actions or your conduct. It's that gap in between, and it's the disharmony or that uneasy feeling you feel when those two don't line up. That's how I like to think of it.
Yeah, and it's created by our brains because they're very complicated things. The most complicated thing in the universe, really, and people probably don't even realise that they have this. And also, it makes you see things that shouldn't be there or might not be there. And talking of which, Dan, I'm saying something that shouldn't be there. Your beard today.
It's gone. So the time of recording this, the beard's got about 3 hours left because it's 2:30.
That's it.
At 2:30, I'm getting it chopped off.
But I thought it was all banned now. The
chopped down. No, as of today, 1st of August, the barbers are allowed to do beards. So yeah.
Good.
So this is a snapshot in time. This is the longest it will ever be.
So my brain is actually saying that. So let's just go over what cognitive dissonance is. I've got a little bit of an example for you, Dan, how it was first invented. It was first coined, you know how I loved how it was coined, the term, was first coined by Leon Festinger in the 1950s. And he was studying a cult who believed that the world was going to end because the world was going to get flooded. And all the cultees, what are they called? Members of the cult, not cultees. The members had sold all their stuff and packed in all their jobs because they thought that the world was going to end. And the flood didn't happen. So what he noticed, this psychologist guy, was that half of the people just went, oh, okay, put it down to experience and then carried on with their lives. And the other half decided that the evidence was wrong. Someone had interpreted the evidence wrong. There was evidence that was going to happen. So they kind of started to construct a world around them and bring in other evidence to support their views that the flood was going to happen. So it's quite common. It's very common at the moment as well, isn't it, Dan?
Didn't the same thing happen, was it 2012, when people thought the Mayan calendar was coming to an end?
Oh, yeah, I've forgotten about that one, yeah.
Yeah, and then obviously the world didn't end. But then There were some people just said, oh, well, we've interpreted the calendar wrong. It's actually such and such a date. They just couldn't accept that what they thought was going to happen.
Yeah.
It was incorrect.
So it's constructing a world around you. Your brain constructs this. Well, what we're seeing with our eyes, what I see with my eyes and my ears is not the same as what you see with your eyes. Obviously, I don't see with my ears, but hear with my ears. Because when we're born and our brains are developed, by the time we're adults, we've already constructed how the world should work. And we've got all these inbuilt belief systems and prejudices and cultural things and religious things. And so what I see and what you see and what everybody else sees in the world is completely different to everyone, isn't it?
Well, that's where global conflict comes in between religions and between races and things like that, because they believe that's the true way that the world should work. In religion, there's 30,000 different forms of Christianity. So everyone thinks, you might be on the same path to some degree, but then everyone thinks slightly different. And then people will go to war with each other about a God, but isn't God meant to love everyone?
Yeah.
People will, like you said earlier, move the goalposts to make their version fit.
Yeah. I was listening to Paul Check podcast the other day, and he was saying that, so if you're a Buddhist and you have a religious epiphany, you'll see Buddha. If you're a Christian, you'll see Jesus. If a Hindu wouldn't see Jesus and a Christian wouldn't see Vishnu or someone like that, you know? So it's really interesting. So what that's saying is more about your brain and your beliefs systems than what it says about the religious epiphany that you haven't. Does that make sense? So
yeah,
that's where it all comes in. And it's really hard once your brain has decided on something, the neuroplasticity in your brain. It's really hard to change those beliefs to something else or to admit that you're wrong. That's why, you know, these flat earth people, once they get into that vision that this is the right way that the world is, that the world is flat, it's really hard for them, no matter how much proof that people say, look, here's this view from the spaceship, they will not change their views. They'll construct evidence around it to say that that's all wrong.
There's a saying, isn't there? When you're a hammer, everything looks like nails.
Ah, that's a good one.
You just interpret everything that suits your narrative. You lose the aspect of logic. You rationalize everything and justify it to suit your story. And yeah. You were saying about that's really interesting when you were saying people who are different religions, they'll have an experience and they'll see different versions of their God. I think that's really a really important role psychedelics can play in changing people's minds, although they can be dangerous as well. But people can take psychedelics like ayahuasca or DMT or psilocybin mushrooms. It can take them out of that reality which they so strongly believe in, and they can almost go to different dimensions or see outside of the box. And it gives them a snapshot of, like, wow, there actually is more to this little thing we call life. But then ultimately, when they wear off, you come back to yourself on this planet Earth, and it can be quite scary because you've seen everything else, but then you come back and you need a strong spiritual grounding to be able to process. So I've never done psychedelics, but I find it really fascinating. And I think there could be like an important role to play in getting people out of the dogma of creating harm.
I've heard of people who were severely depressed and things, went off to the rainforest and had a experience and then come back fine. It's quite interesting, isn't it? But what we forget as well is that us humans only live in a tiny wedge of reality, don't you? We don't see the full spectrum of colors. Like, animals can see lots of different colors. Like, dogs live in a world of smell. We don't really think of our scent. We don't live in a world of smell, really, do we? We don't really use it that often. And, you know, so like, birds can see things differently. And it's, we forget that the world that we see is not the world that other people or other animals experience as well. So that's what, I think that's what the psychedelic drugs do as well, don't they? Because people come back with a spiritual, we're all one, we're all connected. And
yeah, and a lot of them tell the same stories as well, which I find fascinating. I would actually like to do a podcast on psychedelics. I'm just putting that out there.
Okay.
conspiracy theories and psychedelics is my tip.
If you take them, and then I'll podcast, and then I'll interview you while you're on them.
Whilst I'm on them. Or do you want to do it before and after?
Yeah, before and after. Yeah, I'll probably have to peel you down off the ceiling. that would be a good one, actually.
Right, yeah. I was just going to say...
bring it back down.
Yeah, we'll bring it back to you, actually. I was just going to say some common examples of cognitive dissonance, like really simple ones that everyone, we probably all feel them to some degree, and we hear them and we say them. So if you're doing something which goes against your values, so again, just to recap, it's that cognitive dissonance is that uneasy feeling between your values and the way you act. So it's how you know that you should act versus how you actually act. So we tell ourselves, oh, I'm just doing it this one time. Or you say, oh, well, if I do this, nobody's going to know. You still say, well, everyone else does it, so I'll just do it as well, even though you know it's wrong. Or you could say it's not technically illegal. It could be very immoral, but you do anyway. And I thought a really good one is people say, oh, well, if I don't do it, somebody else is going to do it anyway, so I might as well do it and get the benefits. But I think it creates bad karma if you go too much against your values.
Yeah.
So those are quite common ones, aren't they?
Yeah. And the one that we said off air is a classic example, is picking up dog poo, isn't it? Like, if you go out and you haven't got a poo bag, for example, the one time that your dog decides to do its business and you think, oh, it's just this once, and then you get home and you feel guilty about it, and then, although I have done that and then gone back and picked it up later.
No, you haven't, don't lie.
I have, honest, I have. So, it's that, and the difference between how you should be acting and how you think you should be acting, that creates the dissonance, doesn't it? That a very common one as well is for exercise and fitness is, I'll just have that one cake, it won't make any difference. Or I'll just miss the gym this one time. When really, you know that it's the spiral out of control then that starts. I see it a lot when I'm running programs and things, that people go, oh, you know, I just had a day off. It's like, right, yeah. Okay, but don't make your one day off, like the month off, you know? And it's very easy to do that.
Yeah. So as a, like a personal example for me with cognitive dissonance, it's probably quite a trivial one, but it's a good example. So I do a lot of like resistance training. So lifting weights and high intensity things. And I know for a fact I should rest more or stretch more and do corrective exercise. But then when I end up in the gym and then I end up picking the dumbbells up again. And yeah. And so my kind of core values is I know I should have a balanced program. And I know I should be doing more of the stretching and the resting and the correctives. But then I don't act that way. And I don't like it when I do that. So there's a strong feeling of the dissonance and that uneasy feeling. So yeah, that's something I need to work on.
Yeah, I'm the opposite to you. I do all the stretching and none of the weights.
Yeah. It's an easy example to wrap your head around though, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know that you should be doing it, but you don't do it. And that creates kind of, yeah, inside of you, you know that you should be doing it. And then you think, why am I not doing it? And then that you start arguing with yourself, don't you?
Mm.
Inside.
Yeah, and you feel uneasy, don't you?
Yeah.
And create dis-ease.
Well, I was going to say it also happens outside with information that's coming in. So there's quite a famous study that happened where a political view, for example, so they showed some politicians. So if you've got a strong political view, say like you're strong Tory or strong Labour, you will take everything that they say as a good thing, even if it's going against your values. I'll read you the thing. The study took 15 intelligent Democrat voters and 15 equally able Republicans and put them in a brain scanner. And they showed them things with George Bush and John Kelly. Each slide of information showed clear inconsistencies between the politician's words and deeds. They saw, for example, a quote of John Kelly telling an anti-war constituent, "I share your concerns and I voted in favour of a resolution that would have insisted that economic sanctions be given more time to work." The next slide had Kelly writing to another voter saying, "Thank you for expressing your support for the Iraqi invasion. From the outset, I've strongly and unequivocally supported President Bush's response to the crisis." So there were like two totally opposing views from the same person. And the person who was in the scanner would rate how they found the politicians. Did they find them duplicitous? But they didn't hear, they wouldn't hear the bit that said, if they were an anti-war, they wouldn't hear the bit where they said, "Oh yeah, I supported the war." They would just hear, "Yeah, I agree that we shouldn't go to war." But so it's kind of like you only hear the evidence that you want to hear. And that's kind of the cognitive dissonance between you. And we don't even know that we're doing it half the time. That's the bad thing, that even just listening to this podcast, like you were saying now, you might not even know that happens to you, but it happens all the time in the world, doesn't it?
Yeah. On a slightly more kind of lighthearted example, but I never thought of that until you said that. People who watch a football match or a sports match.
Yes, exactly.
They think the referee is doing every decision against them, and they're so convinced, but it's not. Like, the referee's impartial and he's just making decisions by the rules, but you convince yourself that he's against you, and both sides do it. So they're watching the same match, but they both have opposing views.
That's exactly it, because our brains are lying to us all the time. And whatever you want to see, you'll get the evidence there to show that that's the proof for what you want to see, not what is actually reality.
Yeah. And it can also happen when you know that it's actually wrong. So in those examples, you don't actually know what's happening, but there are examples where you know that cognitive dissonance is happening, but because you're going to get a reward for doing it, you do it anyway. So a good example I found that really made sense to me is in like a business term. So imagine a secondhand car salesman. The manager says, "Oh, you need to sell that car ASAP. We need to get it off our books." So someone comes along to buy it, you're looking around, and the manager tells you, "Oh, well, it's actually the engine's probably going to explode in the next 10 miles, but we need to sell it. And if you sell it today, I'll double the commission." So morally, you know you shouldn't sell it because it's going to be pretty dangerous. But you think, "Oh, double commission, I could really use the cash." So the reward starts to get higher. So your morals kind of go down. But that feeling of uneasiness still exists. And it happens quite a lot, doesn't it? People do things against the morals, particularly for money. You see in the medical industry, see doctors pushing vaccines and pills and things like that, even though they know that their education and training, they could treat them another way, but it might take longer and they wouldn't get paid for it. But the rewards aren't there. So it does happen quite a lot.
It's like the gravitational pull towards the ego.
It happens when you read about it and you learn about it. You see it happen all the time.
Yeah, a good example here is gamblers rewrite their memories, creating that when they get a payout, they say it was their excellent judgment and their skill at whatever they were doing. But their losses are down to bad luck or just that near misses.
That's a really good one, yeah. I've done it in the past. When the football's on, you do like a football accumulator, you might try and get 10 results.
Yeah.
And you always tell yourself, oh, I was only one team away this week. And then you tell your friends, oh, I was only one team away. So that justifies you putting another bet on next week because you were so close. But really, like, you don't tell people, no, actually, most of my picks didn't come off. You're probably 7 away. But you tell yourself and you tell your friends, oh, I was so close. It gives you an excuse to do it again.
Yeah. Apparently, athletes tend to put their victories down to training, strength and stamina, and their losses down to unfortunate circumstances.
Yeah.
So we're doing, everybody's doing this, isn't it? Aren't they?
Is there anything else you want to put in, or should we talk about how to reduce the effects?
Let's talk about how to get rid of these. Well, I don't think we'll ever get rid of them. I think it's just knowing that they're there is a good starting point, isn't it?
So awareness is the prerequisite for change, isn't it? So even just being aware of it and being aware that that uneasy feeling is, it actually has a term, first of all, that's called cognitive dissonance or moral dissonance. Even just knowing that can then be a jump off point to trying to reduce the effects. So I think the biggest one is to really get clear on your values and your beliefs and how you think you should act. Because once you get clear on them, then your chances of acting against those is going to be diminished.
Mm.
I think that's a good start point. And then when you find yourself, your day-to-day actions or your conduct, when you're going against your values, call yourself out on it. Don't dampen that feeling. Don't put it to the back of your mind. Call yourself out on it. It brings it more into awareness. And again, it diminishes the chance that you're going to keep doing it.
Yeah, I think cognitive dissonance also shuts down critical thinking, because you might hear, like, for example, Lee's podcast that we did the other day, that might be giving out some information that you didn't really want to hear or didn't want to understand. But that doesn't mean that the information's incorrect or wrong. It's just given a different perspective to what you have been led to believe, what your brain's constructed around you. So you tend to then just shut down and go, oh, it's just talking crap. But if you actually become more critical and you think and say, right, where did this information come from? Go back to the studies. It's understanding that your brain does this all the time. So start to do your own research on things and look at things. Like even Lee said, don't believe a word I say. Go and do your own research.
We all just tend to, things we don't believe in, we just shut down straight away. We don't want to hear it, do we?
Yeah.
So people who believe in things like, I don't know, ghosts and UFOs, and someone mentions it and they just go, ah, it's a load of crap. But they don't even give it a second thought. They probably don't even look into it until it happens to them.
Yeah.
I know those are pretty strange examples. But then on the other side of the coin, people who really, to say UFOs, for example, people who really believe that they exist and aliens exist, how weird is that? Those are the people that see them all the time. They convince themselves that they see it more often than they don't. But I think
if you had been abducted by an alien, then you would believe it, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Or you might be on psychedelics. We'll know when I do the episode.
You go DMT. Up in the spaceship. I can't wait for this episode now.
A really simple way to try and diminish the effects is just learning what cognitive dissonance is. So even listen to this podcast, go away, do your own little bit of research. Some of the examples we've given might have resonated with you. So even just having a little bit more awareness can already start the ball rolling, can't it?
Yeah, and we all do it. We all judge other people. We give them labels, we give them tags, just because that fits in with your narrative. But it doesn't mean that it's right or it's the correct, true reflection for the rest of the world. So become a little bit less judgmental, perhaps, and understand that when you're doing it, that it's not always the case.
Yeah, so doing a little bit of research and preparing to do this podcast, it's made me realise how much I do it.
God, yeah, and me. Yeah.
But yeah, the long-term benefits in that feeling of fulfillment of having strong values and going with your values, it always outweighs the short-term pleasure of maybe doing something for money or doing something because it's satisfying. Like that long-term fulfillment is always better, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I've got a good little passage here. There are 7 billion individual worlds living on this surface of this one planet. We are, all of us, lost inside our own personal realities, our own brain-generated models of how things really are. And if after listening to all of that, you still believe you are the exception and you were really wise and objective and have the powers of above the powers of bias, then you might as well not fight it. You, after all, only human.
That's good.
We're all only human. So. Yeah.
And just, again, just another quick little technique to try and reduce the effects if you're suffering cognitive dissonance, which, you know, it's really affecting your life. Like you say, once you become aware that it's happening, like hopefully through listening to this, you might be a little bit more aware and then you want to make some change. Don't tell yourself, oh my God, I've just realized that I think this way, but I act this way. The gap in between those is huge. Don't look at that as a negative. Just think, oh, well, I'm aware of it now, and use that as a prompt for positive change. And then when you start to change, I would suggest don't do it too drastically, because we've all done it where we change something drastic. It doesn't last, does it? You need to be gradual. So yeah, try and bridge the gap a little bit. So if it's with regards to diet, just change the way you eat 2 or 3 days a week, or just one meal a day, instead of just the whole Monday morning diet starts thing and by Tuesday you're off the wagon. Try and be gradual. So that's another little tip which I think is really effective.
Yeah. And if you have had any alien abduction experiences, then let us know.
I haven't had anything like that, to be honest. I've never seen a UFO.
Have you ever seen one?
I've never seen a ghost. I think you've had more of the crazy, really spiritual experiences, but that might have to come in another episode.
That's going to have to come in another episode because I can't.
Because you have a really good story, which is how me and you met on the Czech course. And but we'll not tell that now. No. It's one of my favourite stories.
No. And we want to hear if anyone has seen a ghost. I've seen a ghost.
Go on then, do tell.
So I used to live in Sunderland with 6 other girls. We lived in this really old, spooky house.
Sounds like the start of a Scooby-Doo episode.
There were 6 girls. It's like a Thrasher. Well, it's a Thrasher movie. 6 of us. And anyway, one day we had this mad party in our house and we had these doors. So all of our bedroom doors locked, okay? So it was a big old terrace house, like Victorian terrace. And we'd accidentally, during the party, pulled one of the doors, girls' doors, shut, and her keys were inside, so we couldn't get the keys, basically. So the next morning, the landlord lived, this was the days before mobile phones and things, so we had to walk to the landlord. So one of the girls set off to walk to the landlord's house, okay, to get a key to open the door. And I'd been in the shower, and I came out the shower, and I looked over down onto the thing, and outside her door was this guy was stood there. I can still see him now in my head, plain as day, like just normal guy. And then Andrea came back from the landlord. So, oh, the landlord's been. And she was like, no, he hasn't. My door's still locked. And I was like, no, he was there. He was stood there. And nobody else in the house had seen him. But I had been very drunk the night before. So
I was going to say, had you been taking any mushrooms or anything the night before that crazy party?
No, but I swear that was a ghost, because the door, I didn't hear the dog bang or anything, because the door was really creaky to come in and out. Yeah. And you never went, and everyone was like freaked out because it was a really old spooky house.
So that's like easier to believe because you weren't expecting to see something like that, and to you it was normal.
I wasn't
normal.
In a spooky castle, and it wasn't
that's what I was
Anne
Boleyn
with a head under her arms. It was just like a normal guy.
If someone told you to spend the night in a house and say, oh, this is the most haunted house in Durham, then your chances of seeing, because you're then going to tell yourself that your chances of seeing a ghost or something spooky increased massively. So that's cognitive dissonance. It's not logical. It starts to become emotional, and you start to tell yourself a different story even before you're there, don't you?
Yeah. I've had lots of weird things happen to me though. So yeah, we'll get into those over the next year. I actually forgot we were recording there when I talked about that.
I can edit it out.
Yeah, so where are you then, Dan, this week? What are you doing? What are you up to?
This week, the gyms have reopened as we were recording this. So back into the swing of actually seeing more people out exercising and how the world's changed a little bit.
So you're taking everyone's temperature before they come in?
Yep. I think it's 37.8. That would be a temperature would be too high. We've had no one even near that. So no, everyone's been healthy. Good. Yeah, getting back into the swing of everything being a little bit more normal. What about you?
Well, I am just teaching online still. I'm hopefully going to open my studio in September, but we'll just wait and see how that goes. I don't know when classes. I'll get one-to-ones back first and then classes after that.
Yeah, but you've done a few outdoor ones, haven't you?
I've done one outdoor one, yeah, but the football team had matches last week, so I couldn't use them, so on the football pitch. But yeah, good.
It is nice as coaches to go out and see people and teach back in person again, isn't it?
So nice just to be in a class again. You know, you forget, because now I've got everyone muted, I can't hear them grunting and groaning and complaining. So yeah, it was nice. It was really nice, actually, yeah. So I can't wait. Actually, that's given me the impetus to get back into real classes again and do like a combination, I think, of online and offline.
So speaking of which, where can people find you?
Organicpilates.co.uk. I've got a new program starting in September, the Flatten Your Abs program. It's now on sale in my shop area. So if you want to go in there and join us, it's really good. Where are you?
The best place is on Facebook at Daniel Purvis Health and Fitness. And the podcast is everywhere. Spotify, iTunes, Podbean. Where else are we?
Oh, well, this week I've just got us onto Alexa as well, onto Amazon. So if you have an Alexa or an Echo, you can now find our podcast on there.
Ah, there you go. Seamless integration.
Very well done. Okay then, guys. Thank you for listening and have a great week. And we'll see you on our next mission.
On our next psychedelic mission around the universe.
Yeah.
See you, everyone.